The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, how's your bracket doing? My champion is still intact, at least up until this point, because they don't play until tonight. But after last night's games, I've added yet another good old period stain across the west side of my bracket now. So the whole east side of my bracket and the whole west side of my bracket has been taken out like they were Tupac and Biggie, man. So, half of my final four picks are out, and the other two are playing for tonight. So, but we did have some damn good games yesterday in the first set of the Sweet 16 games yesterday. So let's get right into it. First, we had Florida Atlantic versus Tennessee. And this is over in the east side of the bracket. And I did have Tennessee moving on in that game. But damn, Florida Atlantic has been, there's always a dark horse. There's always a Cinderella team every single year. You never know who it's going to end up being. This year, it is Florida Atlantic. This team, they took out Purdue. They took out freaking Memphis. Fairleigh Dickinson, and now they've taken out Tennessee, who was ranked, Purdue was ranked number one at some points in this season, and then Tennessee also has been ranked in the top 25 all season long, so they are taking out really damn good teams along the way, and it was they made it a close game throughout. I mean, there was never a point where you're like, oh, Tennessee's running away with this. No, Florida Atlantic, they kept in it. They kept treading water, and then in the second half, they just stayed with it, and they ended up getting the win 62-55, and they have moved on to the Elite Eight. Then the other East Side matchup, which ended up being probably the best game of the day, at least in my opinion. First of all, it was the first overtime game we've had in March Madness so far, which says a lot, because, man, there are some years where we get, like, tons of overtime games. Well, this year, we have not had any up until yesterday's first game between Kansas State and Michigan State, which was just one hell of a game. I mean, it was back and forth. There was never a point where you were like, oh, Michigan State's running away with it. Oh, Kansas State's running away with it. No, it was back and forth. It was tied. And then we go into overtime, and that was the only time I felt like Kansas State was able to pull away, and they did get the win 98-93. But that was the only time in the game where I was like, shit, man, Kansas State has it locked down, because they did. Once overtime hit, they put it together. And so in the east side of the bracket, the Elite Eight is going to be Florida Atlantic versus Kansas State. So I'm not sure a lot of brackets have those two teams there in the Elite Eight on the east side of the bracket. I sure as hell didn't have either one of them there. So that's the east side. Then on the west side of the bracket, in the Sweet 16 matchups, we had Arkansas versus UConn. UConn just dominated Arkansas, and so they've moved on to the Elite Eight. And then a great game last night between Gonzaga and UCLA. As I said on Monday's show, this is always a great matchup in March Madness, historically. Always has been. Usually comes down to a last-second shot, and what do you know? Last night's game came down to a last-second shot. You know, UCLA actually dominated the first half. They dominated the majority of the game, but then Gonzaga just made a big, big run towards the end of the second half. They were able to go on a 10-1 run and cut the deficit down, and then they hit the game-winning shot in the last seconds of the game, and they would go on to win 79-76, and the Elite Eight on the west side of the bracket is going to be UConn versus Gonzaga. So that's going to be an interesting matchup. I didn't have either team representing on the east side in the Elite Eight with Florida Atlantic and Kansas State. My pick, of course, was Marquette, and they got taken out last week. So in the matchup between Florida Atlantic and Kansas State, I do have Kansas State actually going on to win this one and ending the Cinderella run of Florida Atlantic. Kansas State, they're just a really damn good team. They play great defensively, but they just really have put together a really solid run, and I think Kansas State's going to get the win against Florida Atlantic, and they're going to move on to the Final Four. And then on the west side, UConn versus Gonzaga. This is a tough matchup, two good teams, but UConn has been one of the more consistent teams this year, whereas Gonzaga's been pretty up and down. So I'm going to go UConn in that matchup, and I've got UConn moving on to the Final Four. And then in today's Sweet 16 matchups, we have Alabama versus San Diego State. I, of course, have San Diego State moving on to the Final Four, so I have San Diego State winning in this matchup against Alabama. And then the other matchup in the South Side bracket is Creighton versus Princeton. And I did not have either of those teams in this going on into this side of the bracket. And I do have Creighton moving on. Princeton has been another one of those kind of Cinderella teams that we've been talking about all throughout March Madness. And they've beat some really good teams along the way. But I just think Creighton's going to step it up. They've been one of the good teams all season. And they're usually a really good tournament team. So I have Creighton moving on to play San Diego State in the Elite Eight this weekend. And then on the Midwest side of the bracket today in the Sweet 16, we have Houston versus Miami. I had both of those teams moving on, and I have Miami moving on to the Elite Eight originally, so I'm going to keep that as my pick. And then, of course, Xavier versus Texas. You know, this is the game that matters the most today, at least it does to me. Of course, I have the Texas Longhorns as my national champion. So, of course, I have them moving on against Xavier, and I have them moving on to the Elite Eight. So, hook 'em horns, motherfuckers. As I said, I still have half of my Final Four good to go. My Final Four originally was San Diego State versus Marquette. San Diego State is still in it. Marquette was knocked out last week. And then I had Texas versus UCLA. Texas is still in it, and UCLA was knocked out last night. And then my national championship matchup, I had Marquette versus Texas. And, of course, Marquette, they got knocked out last week. And so Texas is still in it. And good thing, because that's who I picked as my national champion. And they still got it on lock, but they don't have an easy path. They've got to take on Xavier tonight. So we'll see if they're able to do it. But regardless, hook 'em horns, motherfuckers. All right, so since it's Friday, let's get caught up on the playoff standings here in the NBA, because April 11th is when the play-in begins, and April 15th is when the actual NBA playoffs begin. So let's start off on the Western Conference side of things. The number one seed right now, still the Denver Nuggets at 49-24. Number two seed, Memphis Grizzlies at 45-27. Number three seed, the Sacramento Kings at 43-29. Number four seed, the Phoenix Suns at 38-34. Number five seed, the Los Angeles Clippers at 39-35. And the number six seed, the Golden State Warriors at 38-36. And then in the play-in tournament, the number seven seed would be the Minnesota Timberwolves at 37-37. Number eight seed would be the Dallas Mavericks at 36-37. Number nine seed would be my shitty-ass Los Angeles Lakers at 36-37. And rounding out the play-in tournament would be the number 10 seed, the New Orleans Pelicans, at 36-37. Then turning to the Eastern Conference, the number one seed would be the Milwaukee Bucks at 52-20. Number two seed would be the Boston Celtics at 50-23. Number three seed would be the Philadelphia 76ers at 49-23. Number four seed would be the Cleveland Cavaliers at 47-28. Number five seed, the New York Knicks at 42-33. Number six seed, the Miami Heat at 40-34. And then turning to the play-in tournament side of the Eastern Conference, the number seven seed would be the Brooklyn Nets at 39-34. Number eight seed, Atlanta Hawks at 36-37. Number nine seed, the Toronto Raptors at 35-38. And rounding out the play-in tournament on the Eastern side of things, the Chicago Bulls would be the number 10 seed at 34-38. So that's how the playoffs would that's how the playoff picture is looking right now as we sit today. I still don't think there's going to be too much of a shakeup here. Maybe a team or two could sneak in, but I kind of feel like this is where we're at. I feel like the Nuggets are a shoe-in for the number one overall seed on the West, and I feel like the Bucks got the East locked down. The 76ers are starting to make a nice little run right now, but I don't know if it's going to be enough to take to overtake the Bucks. But there still are a couple of weeks here. But overall, I kind of feel like this is what it's going to look like. Maybe a team or two could shift around. But that is how the NBA playoff picture is currently looking today. Then we have another nice UFC matchup this weekend. It is not for any titles. It's just a good old-fashioned, fun, kicking the shit out of each other fights here. But the thing is, man, there are three damn good-ass fights that are going to be on. Beginning with the main event, it's Chito Marlon Vera, who is the number three ranked fighter, versus Cody Sandhagen, who is the number five ranked fighter. So this is a big deal in their weight class because really, whoever wins has the potential to fight the champion belt holder in their weight class if they are to win this one. Now, me personally, I'm actually a huge Chito Vera fan. He's just really fun for me to watch. As a matter of fact, he's kind of like one of the first once I kind of started really getting into UFC a couple years ago, he was one of the first guys I kind of latched onto. I just saw one of his fights, and it really stuck with me. I really just kind of like his style. He's very scrappy. He's very, he's just crazy in the fucking octagon. So I like watching him. Sandhagen, he's also a very good fighter as well. So I'm expecting this to be an excellent matchup between two really solid fighters. As I said, this is basically to try and fight the title holder. I am going to go with Vera in this one, even though I think Sandhagen is an excellent matchup and really on the come up right now. But I think Chito is going to get the best of him in this one. I actually kind of see a knockout here for Vera. That's what he's known for. Those. Like I said, he's a pretty crazy fighter. So I've got Vera knocking him, Sandhagen, out in the third round. And then the co-main event is Holly Holm, the number three ranked fighter, versus Yana Kunitskaya. I'm a huge Holly Holm fan as well, so I'm definitely looking forward to this fight, since two fighters I'm really interested in. Actually, three fighters I'm really interested in, because I'm going to be talking about one more matchup here after this one. But Holly Holm, she actually just signed a new contract extension with UFC, so better get used to seeing her for a few more fights. She's also still in contention to fight in a title matchup, and she's still doing it. I mean, she still looks good. She still boxes. She still has great boxing skills, great kickboxing skills. So I do have her winning in this one. I'm not really sure. I really haven't seen this Kunitskaya chick fight, so I don't really know what she's about. But I am going to go Holly Holm in this one, just because I'm a big fan of hers, and she is the third ranked fighter in her weight class. So, she's still good. She's still solid, and I feel like she's going to come in and get the win in this one. I don't know if it's going to be a knockout. I think that one will go the distance, but she'll get the unanimous decision on that one. And then another matchup I'm looking forward to: Andrea Lee versus Macy Barber. Macy Barber is just an up and coming fighter who I've enjoyed watching. I've seen her last couple of fights, which have been really really great to watch, and I really just like how she fights. I kind of feel like she's an up and comer who at some point here is going to work her way up in the ranks and eventually become a title contender and be fighting for a title at some point in the near future. So I think you should really look out for her, and I think it's going to be a nice little matchup between her and Andrea Lee. And I'm going to go ahead and take Macy Barber in this one, a knockout in the second round. Now let's move on to my baseball predictions for the NL and AL Central teams. As you know, I did the West last week. I did the East on Monday, and so now we're going to round it out with the Central. I think there's a lot less impressive teams in both the AL and NL Central as opposed to the West and the East, which is kind of why I saved the worst for last, because some of these teams are pretty fucking bad. So let's get it started over in the NL Central, and I believe the St. Louis Cardinals are going to take that division as they normally do. They're just a very strong veteran team, and they made a really nice run towards the end of the season last year, and I just kind of see them picking up where they left off last year. They've got the MVP Goldschmidt coming back. They've got Nolan Arenado, who was also in running for the MVP last year as well. Then you also have Tyler O'Neill, who really came on strong in the second half of the season. So I kind of expect that dude to be a huge offensive factor for them this year. And then in their starting pitching, they have Flaherty returning as well. He's been a pretty solid pitcher for them the last couple of years. Although I will say the biggest weakness, in my opinion, for the Cardinals is their starting pitching, because it's just so up in the air. They still have Adam Wainwright, but it was just announced yesterday that he is battling through an injury. So it looks like he's going to miss the first, I believe it said 4 months of the season. So he's going to be missing the first half of the season, it's looking like. And that's no good for them, because Wainwright's been a veteran workhorse for them who's been very consistent and solid. But lucky for them, they're not in that good of a division. So I feel like their starting pitching is a weakness, but their offense and their defense is going to mask the weakness of their starting pitching. And also, their starting pitching isn't horrible. It's just not as strong as a lot of the other teams around the league. Say, like, I don't know, the Braves. I feel like the Cardinals are going to win the NL Central this year again. Then finishing in second place, I have the Milwaukee Brewers. They are a team that have a lot of potential, but I feel like they've been that team now for the last couple of seasons. And it's like, you either got to be that team, or you're just going to continue to be the team that may eventually get there, but never does. And I kind of feel like that's where the Brewers are at. They do have some very solid players, but I mean, overall, they have the same issue, I believe, as the Cardinals, where they don't have a solid starting pitching staff. Most of the pitchers are up in the air. I don't believe they really have an ace who you could look at and go, this is the guy who's going to dominate every time he comes out on the mound. They do play well defensively. I don't think they're going to have any issues scoring runs, but I feel like they're going to get blown up at certain points of the season, just because I think they're starting pitching and their bullpen not that great either. So the Brewers have a lot of questions, and as I said, they've been one of those teams on the come up. I've felt like they were a team that could potentially win this division at some point over the last couple of seasons, but until they reach that potential, I can't believe in them. So this year, I've fallen back, and I don't believe in the Brewers. Then finishing in third place in the NL Central, I have the Chicago Cubs. I feel like they're a team. They were in an extreme rebuilding mode these last two seasons, and I feel like this year they did make some big moves. You know, they did sign Dansby Swanson, the shortstop, one of the top shortstop free agents out there. He's great defensively, and he was great offensively last year for the Braves. So he should step right in and make an impact for the Cubs, because the Cubs have their problem has been scoring runs, but also their defense has not been good. So I feel like Swanson's going to take care of two factors right there for them, get them some runs, but also help them out defensively. Then they bolstered their pitching staff up a bit by signing Marcus Stroman and Jameson Taillon. And then Cody Bellinger is another free agent signing they made this offseason. He has been falling off the last couple of seasons with the Dodgers, but I feel like he's going to add a little bit of veteran presence and make the Cubs not look as terrible as they've looked the last couple of seasons. But once again, their major weakness is the same weakness as the last thing that I said about the last two teams, and that is starting pitching. Yes, they added Stroman and Taillon, but Taillon is very streaky and hasn't really been that good for a few years now, and he's injury prone. And then you've got Stroman, who's also kind of the same pitcher, where he's streaky. He'll go on some big winning streaks. Then he'll go on some big losing streaks. And he tends to get injured as well. But beyond those two, they don't really have much else going on with their entire pitching staff. So I think it's very questionable with them at pitching. But I do think they're a much improved team. And I think they will make a lot more noise this year than they have the last couple of seasons. But I don't really think they're a playoff contender. Then finishing in fourth place in the NL Central, I have the Pittsburgh Pirates. Hey, Andrew McCutchen is back, so good for them. You know, he's been gone the last couple of seasons. He isn't what he used to be when he first played with the Pirates, but I feel like this is a nice little last hurrah for McCutchen. He did have a really solid season with the Brewers last year, so if he's able to keep the injuries down, he's going to be a nice, solid player for them, and it's going to be a nice homecoming for him. But they do have a lot of nice young talent. You know, they got Ke'Bryan Hayes at third base, who started to get hot towards the end of last season, who has a lot of potential. Then they also have the second baseman, shortstop O'Neill Cruz, who had a phenomenal season last year. I expect him to only get better. But then you also have the Brian Reynolds issue. He wants to be traded because he wants a new contract. But the Pirates have yet to even really entertain any ideas of trading him. So who knows what's going to happen there? I kind of have a feeling at some point this season, Reynolds is probably going to get traded, but who knows? That's actually kind of something that the Pirates are always known for. That's why when I mention both Hayes and Cruz, don't be shocked if they end up as trade bait at the trade deadline. But then again, you never know what's going to happen with the Pirates. But they do have a lot of young talent. But once again, their biggest weakness is, what have I just been saying? Starting pitching with the NL Central. Like, every one of these teams has really, really weak starting pitching. And the Pirates are right there. They are the nobody squad when it comes to their starting pitching. So, not expecting much from them in the pitching department, but they do have a lot of young talent, and I expect that young talent to flourish and probably get traded at some point this season or next season. And then rounding out the NL Central, I have the Cincinnati Reds. They're just an awful-ass fucking team. But hey, at least y'all still have Joey Votto. I believe this is going to be his last hurrah. I could be wrong, but I feel like at some point it's going to be his last hurrah. But I seem to recall hearing that he announced this is going to be his last year. Regardless, that's about the only thing that the Reds have to root for this year, because I have a feel they're also one of those teams, kind of similar to the Pirates, where they've got a lot of young, good talent that's probably going to flourish for a little while there, and then they'll probably get traded around the trade deadline or next year. The Reds are just a really oddball team. They traded away like all of their good players last year. They did absolutely nothing this offseason. So I don't know what the hell they're going to do. It's just, I guess, the farewell Joey Votto tour. Now let's turn to the AL Central. And let's see who I've got winning this one. Now I do have, I would say, my surprise team of the season for me comes from the AL Central, and that is going to be my AL Central winning team, and that is the Chicago White Sox. I just feel like they're a team that is about to put it together. They do have a really, really solid roster. They did add Andrew Benintendi in the offseason, so that's a nice little addition there to help them out offensively and defensively. Then you still have Tim Anderson, the outstanding shortstop. He's great defensively, but he's also really consistent on the offensive side of things. And you have Andrew Vaughn, another guy who was on the come up last year. Their starting pitching is really, really good. They've got Dylan Cease, who had a breakout year last year. Then you have Giolito as well, who's just been a solid guy for the last couple of seasons for the White Sox. So I feel like the White Sox are going to be that team this year who finally puts it together. But I also feel like they're going to be that surprise team that comes out of nowhere and makes a nice run and basically dominates the AL Central. I will say their only weakness is the bullpen. And it's really just because it's questionable to me. I'm not saying they can't put it together, but I feel like looking over their roster. If there is a weakness, that's going to be it. But overall, I feel like the White Sox are a good-ass team that's poised to make a nice solid run in the American League this year. Then finishing in second place in the AL Central, I have the Cleveland Guardians. They're just an overall really solid team to me. I feel like they have one of the best starting pitching staffs in the league. You know, they've got Shane Bieber, who's won a Cy Young before. He's been very consistent. He has battled through some injuries the last couple of seasons, but hey, when healthy, he is a great player. But speaking of Cy Young, in my personal opinion, Tristan McKenzie, this guy, he had a really nice year last year, but to me, this is a dark horse for the Cy Young this year. I feel the Guardians have always been a team that is able to find some of the best starting pitchers you will ever know. And they, for some reason, are just able to not only find like really good starting pitchers, but Cy Young winning pitchers. And I feel like Tristan McKenzie has the potential to at least be in the conversation for the Cy Young this year. Not sure he's going to win it, but I feel like he's going to be in the conversation this year. So I feel, look out for Tristan McKenzie as one of the up-and-comers, and my prediction is he's going to be in the running for the Cy Young this year. Then you also have Class A, who is one of the best closers in the league. So their pitching, I think, is shored up. Then their defense, you know, they've got Ramirez out there defensively, but he scores them a lot of runs. And then you've also got Jimenez, who just had a breakout season last year offensively and defensively. I expect them to continue that. Now, the only reason why I don't have the Guardians winning their division this year is because I don't know if they're going to score enough runs, if they're going to be able to keep up with teams like the White Sox or the Yankees or the Astros, teams that I feel like are going to be able to just score you out of the building. I don't know if the Guardians have that potential to do that. They do have the potential definitely to score runs, but if it becomes like one of those just back and forth type of games, I just kind of see teams like the Yankees and the Astros just eking them out and blowing them out of the park. But I do think the Guardians are going to be a good team, I think they're going to be led most notably by their starting pitching. Then finishing in third place in the AL Central, I have the Minnesota Twins. they're just they've got a solid team, but they've never been able to put it together. They were able to hang on to Carlos Correa after his wild offseason of signing this big-ass contract with the Giants and then not passing the physical with them, and then signing a big-ass contract with the Mets and then not passing the physical with them. And so he just ends up re-signing with the Minnesota Twins. And so I expect him to have a good season. Byron Buxton, he's been a pretty solid guy when he's not injured. But overall, I just kind of feel like the Twins are a very underwhelming team. I think their weakness is their starting pitching as well, which was the theme of the NL Central. That's going to be their theme also, I believe. There really isn't, I don't even think they really have an ace on their squad. So I'm not really expecting much from the Twins. I feel like they could be a team that makes some noise and, you know, fucks up some moments at certain points in time during the season, but I don't feel like they're going to be much of a threat this year. Coming in fourth place in the AL Central, I have the Detroit Tigers. I do feel like the Tigers are a team starting last year that in the next, I want to say maybe 3-4 seasons, we're going to be talking about the Tigers as a legit contender. And that's just because when you look at their farm squad, all of their AAA and AA prospects they have, I feel like the Tigers are going to be a legit team here soon. Not this year, though. I do think they're going to continue to build towards what they should become here, maybe next year, maybe the following season. But they are a team I look at, and they just have a lot of potential. They do have a lot of good guys. You know, they had the Spencer Torkelson guy who really came on hot last year. So I expect that guy to come on, to continue it and come on hot this year and strong and be one of their biggest forces offensively. Then they've got another guy, Riley Green, who I expect to have a pretty solid season. Then you have veterans like Austin Meadows, who also, when healthy, he could provide them a spark. But overall, I kind of feel like the Tigers are just going to be a struggling squad. Their weakness is also, once again, the weakness of a lot of teams today, the starting pitching. But like I said, I feel like the Tigers, they're an up-and-coming team. They might be a pretty decent team to watch on occasions this year just because, like I said, this Torkelson guy, Riley Green, the two of them look like they're solid guys you could build a team around. Roger Clemens' son is also playing for them as well. So I feel like this is a team you're going to want to look out for here in the next couple of years. And like I said, I felt it was beginning last year. The Tigers were starting to slowly put it together. Once they start slowly bringing up some more guys, maybe making some trades or free agency moves. But look out for the Tigers in the next couple of years, but not this year for sure. And then rounding out the AL Central, I have the Kansas City Royals. They are just an awful-ass team, which really sucks because they do have a great, great player in Vinny Pasquantino. He's a first baseman, had a solid year last year. I feel like he's going to have another breakout year this year. And then, of course, they have Salvador Perez at catcher. But beyond those two, this team sucks. They're going to have a difficult time scoring runs beyond those two guys. They're going to have a difficult time keeping up with the rest of the teams in the league. And their pitching is just atrocious. I mean, Zach Greinke is still on their starting pitching squad. And this guy, I mean, Greinke's pretty much been just petering along the last like three seasons. So it's kind of shocking that he hasn't retired yet. But hey, he's got a big ass contract, so I don't blame him either. But I just don't see the Royals being a good team at all. I feel like they're going to be one of the worst teams in the league this year. So not expecting much from the Kansas City Royals at all this year. So those are my 2023 baseball season predictions for the NL Central and AL Central teams. If you'd like to go back and listen to my predictions for the AL and NL West, that was from last Friday's show. And then the AL and NL East was on Monday's show, so you can check that out. And then on Monday's show, I'm going to discuss my playoff predictions, who I think is going to, obviously, I already said who I think is going to win all the divisions, but I'm going to talk about the wild card spots, then also talk about my World Series matchup, and ultimately make my World Series predictions. So baseball starts next Thursday, March 30th, y'all. So it's right around the corner. We got a jam-packed weekend of sports. Hopefully, tonight's games for March Madness are just as fantastic as last night's games. Then we've got the Elite Eight beginning tomorrow, and we will know the Final Four matchups on Monday. The NBA playoffs right around the corner, and then, like I said, those great UFC matchups. We also got some good boxing matchups this weekend as well. I didn't go over it, but boxing's starting to get going again. So hopefully I'm going to be starting to talk about that as well. Not as well-versed in boxing as I am UFC and all the other sports, but when there's a good fight, especially when my boy Alvarez is fighting, I'm always going to be talking about a Canelo fight because love that dude, but there is a good fight this weekend in boxing. So there is a shit ton of sports this weekend, so enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday. And as always, hook 'em horns, motherfuckers!